Chapter 3. Of my husband. Why were you afraid of your husband? Because he had strangled my little dog. Another smile must have passed around the courtroom. In days when any nobleman had a right to hang his peasants and most of them exercised it, pinching a pet animal's windpipe was nothing to make a fuss about. At this point, one of the judges, who appears to have had a certain sympathy for the accused, suggested that she should be allowed to explain herself in her own way, and she thereupon made the following statement. The first years of her marriage had been lonely, but her husband had not been unkind to her. If he had had a child, she would not have been unhappy, but the days were long, and it rained too much. It was true that her husband, whenever he went away and left her, brought her a handsome present on his return, but this did not make up for the loneliness. At least nothing had, till he brought her the little brown dog from the east. After that she was much less unhappy. Her husband seemed pleased that she was so fond of the dog. He gave her leave to put her jeweled bracelet around its neck, and to keep it always with her. One day as he had fallen asleep in her room, with the dog at her feet, as his habit was. Her feet were bare and resting on his back. Suddenly she was waked by her husband. He stood beside her, smiling not unkindly. You look like my great-grandmother, Julien de Cornault, lying in the chapel with her feet on a little dog, he said. The analogy sent a chill through her, but she laughed and answered, well, when I am dead you must put me beside her, carved in marble, with my dog at my feet. Oh, we'll wait and see, he said, laughing also, but with his black brows close together. He dog is the emblem of fidelity. And do you doubt my right to lie with mine at my feet? When I'm in doubt I find out, he answered. A man, old man, he added, and people say I make you lead a lonely life. But I swear you shall have your monument, if you earn it. And I swear to be faithful, she returned, if only for the sake of having my little dog at my feet. Not long afterward he went on business to the Quimper Assizes, and while he was away his aunt, the widow of a great nobleman of the duchy, came to spend a night at Kerfel on her way to the pardon of Sweet Barb. She was a woman of great piety and consequence, and much respected by Yves de Cornault, and when she proposed to Anne to go with her to Sweet Barb, no one could object, and even the chaplain declared himself in favor of the pilgrimage. So Anne set out for Sweet Barb, and there for the first time she talked with Herve de Lanrevain. He had come once or twice to Kerfel with his father, but as he had never before exchanged a dozen words with him. They did not talk for more than 5 minutes now. It was under the chestnuts, as the procession was coming out of the chapel. He said, I pity you, and she was surprised, for as he had not supposed that anyone thought her an object of pity. He added, call for me when you need me, and she smiled a little, but was glad afterward, and thought often of the meeting. She confessed to having seen him 3 times afterward. Not more. How or where she would not say, one had the impression that she feared to implicate someone. Their meetings had been rare and brief, and at the last he had told her that he was starting the next day for a foreign country, on a mission which was not without peril, and might keep him for many months absent. He asked her for a remembrance, and as he had none to give him but the collar about the little dog's neck. She was sorry afterward that as he had given it, but he was so unhappy at going that as he had not had the courage to refuse. Her husband was away at the time. When he returned a few days later he picked up the little dog to pet it, and noticed that its collar was missing. His wife told him that the dog had lost it in the undergrowth of the park, and that she and her maids had hunted a whole day for it. It was true, she explained to the court, that as he had made the maids search for the necklet they all believed the dog had lost it in the park. Her husband made no comment, and that evening at supper he was in his usual mood, between good and bad. You could never tell which. He talked a good deal, describing what he had seen and done at Rennes, but now and then he stopped and looked hard at her, And when she went to bed, she found her little dog strangled on her pillow. The little thing was dead, but still warm. She stooped to lift it, and her distress turned to horror when she discovered that it had been strangled by twisting twice round its throat the necklace he had given to Landravain. The next morning at dawn she buried the dog in the garden, and hid the necklace in her breast. She said nothing to her husband, then or later, and he said nothing to her. But that day he had a peasant hanged for stealing a faggot in the park, and the next day he nearly beat to death a young horse he was breaking. Winter set in, and the short days passed, and the long nights, one by one, and she heard nothing of Herve de Landravain. It might be that her husband had killed him, or merely that he had been robbed of the necklace. Day after day by the hearth among the spinning maids, night after night alone on her bed, she wondered and trembled. Sometimes at table her husband looked across at her and smiled, and then she felt sure that Landravain was dead. She dared not try to get news of him, for she was sure her husband would find out if she did. As he had an idea that he could find out anything. Even when a witch woman who was a noted seer, and could show you the whole world in her crystal, came to the castle for a night's shelter, and the maids flocked to her, and held back. The winter was long, and black and rainy. One day, in Yves de Cornault's absence, some gypsies came to Kerfel with a troop of performing dogs. Anne bought the smallest and cleverest, a white dog with a feathery coat and one blue and one brown eye. It seemed to have been ill-treated by the gypsies, and clung to her plaintively when she took it from them. That evening her husband came back, and when she went to bed she found the dog strangled on her pillow. After that she said to herself that she would never have another dog. But one bitter cold evening a poor lean greyhound was found whining at the castle gate, and she took him in, and forbade the maids to speak of him to her husband. She hid him in a room that no one went to, smuggled food to him from her own plate, made him a warm bed to lie on, and petted him like a child. Yves de Cornault came home, and the next day she found the greyhound strangled on her pillow. She wept in secret, but said nothing, and resolved that even if she met a dog dying of hunger she would never bring him into the castle. But one day she found a young sheepdog, a brindled puppy with good blue eyes, lying with a broken leg in the snow of the park. Yves de Cornault was at Rennes, and she brought the dog in, warmed and fed it, tied up its leg, and hid it in the castle till her husband's return. The day before, she gave it to a peasant woman who lived a long way off, and paid her handsomely, to care for it and say nothing. But that night she heard a whining and scratching at her door, and when she opened it the lame puppy, drenched and shivering, jumped up on her with little sobbing barks. She hid him in her bed, and the next morning was about to have him taken back to the peasant woman, when she heard her husband ride into the court. She shut the dog in a chest, and went down to receive him. An hour or two later, when she returned to her room, the puppy lay strangled on her pillow. After that she dared not make a pet of any other dog, and her loneliness became almost unendurable. Sometimes, when she crossed the court of the castle, and thought no one was looking, she stopped to pat the old pointer at the gate. But one day as she was caressing him her husband came out of the chapel, and the next day the old dog was gone. This curious narrative was not told in one sitting of the court, or received without impatience and incredulous comment. It was plain that the judges were surprised by its puerility, and that it did not help the accused in the eyes of the public. It was an odd tale, certainly, but what did it prove? That Yves de Cornault disliked dogs, and that his wife, to gratify her own fancy, persistently ignored this dislike. As for pleading this trivial disagreement as an excuse for her relations, whatever their nature with her supposed accomplice, the argument was so absurd that her own lawyer manifestly regretted having let her make use of it, and tried several times to cut short her story. But she went on to the end, with a kind of hypnotized insistence, as though the scenes she evoked were so real to her that she had forgotten where she was, and imagined herself to be reliving them. At length the judge, who had previously shown a certain kindness to her, said, leaning forward a little, "One may suppose, from his row of dozing colleagues, then you would have us believe that you murdered your husband, because he would not let you keep a pet dog?" "I did not murder my husband."
"Who did, then?"
"Herb de Landrevane?"
"No."
"Who then? Can you tell us?"
"Yes, I can tell you. The dogs." At that point she was carried out of the court in a swoon. It was evident that her lawyer tried to get her to abandon this line of defense. Possibly her explanation, whatever it was, had seemed convincing when she poured it out to him in the heat of their first private colloquy. But now that it was exposed to the cold daylight of judicial scrutiny, and the banter of the town, he was thoroughly ashamed of it, and would have sacrificed her without a scruple, to save his professional reputation. But the obstinate judge, who perhaps, after all, was more inquisitive than kindly, evidently wanted to hear the story out, and she was ordered, the next day, to continue her deposition. She said that after the disappearance of the old watchdog, nothing particular happened for a month or two. Her husband was much as usual. She did not remember any special incident. But one evening a peddler woman came to the castle and was selling trinkets to the maids. She had no heart for trinkets, but she stood looking on while the women made their choice. And then, she did not know how, but the peddler coaxed her into buying for herself an odd pear-shaped pomander with a strong scent, in it as he had once seen something of the kind on a gypsy woman. She had no desire for the pomander, and did not know why he had bought it. The peddler said that whoever wore it had the power to read the future, but she did not really believe that, or care much either. However, she bought the thing, and took it up to her room, where she sat turning it about in her hand. Then the strange scent attracted her, and she began to wonder what kind of spice was in the box. She opened it, and found a gray bean rolled in a strip of paper, and on the paper she saw a sign she knew, and a message from Herve de Landrevane, saying that he was at home again, and would be at the door in the court, that night after the moon had set. She burned the paper, and then sat down to think. It was nightfall, and her husband was at home. He had no way of warning Landrevane, and there was nothing to do but to wait. At this point I fancy the drowsy courtroom beginning to wake up. Even to the oldest hand on the bench there must have been a certain aesthetic relish in picturing the feelings of a woman on receiving such a message at nightfall from a man living 20 miles away, to whom he had no means of sending a warning. She was not a clever woman, I imagine, and as the first result of her cogitation she appears to have made the mistake of being, that evening, too kind to her husband. She could not ply him with wine, according to the traditional expedient, for though he drank heavily at times he had a strong head, and when he drank beyond its strength it was because he chose to, and not because a woman coaxed him. Not his wife, at any rate she was an old story by now. As I read the case, I fancy there was no feeling for her left in him, but the hatred occasioned by his supposed dishonor. At any rate, she tried to call up her old graces, but early in the evening he complained of pains and fever, and left the hall, to go up to his room. His servant carried him a cup of hot wine, and brought back word that he was sleeping, and not to be disturbed. And an hour later, when Anne lifted the tapestry and listened at his door, she heard his loud regular breathing. She thought it might be a faint, and stayed a long time barefooted in the cold passage, her ear to the crack, but the breathing went on too steadily and naturally, to be other than that of a man in a sound sleep. She crept back to her room reassured, and stood in the window watching the moon set through the trees of the park. The sky was misty and starless, and after the moon went down the night was pitch black. She knew the time had come, and stole along the passage, past her husband's door, where she stopped again, to listen to his breathing to the top of the stairs. There she paused a moment, and assured herself that no one was following her. Then she began to go down the stairs in the darkness. They were so steep and winding, that she had to go very slowly, for fear of stumbling. Her one thought was to get the door unbolted, tell Landravain to make his escape, and hasten back to her room. She had tried the bolt earlier in the evening, and managed to put a little grease on it, but nevertheless, when she drew it, it gave a squeak. Not loud, but it made her heart stop, and the next minute, overhead, she heard a noise. What noise? The prosecution interposed. My husband's voice calling out my name and cursing me. What did you hear after that? A terrible scream and a fall. Where was Herve de Landravain at this time? He was standing outside in the court. I just made him out in the darkness. I told him for God's sake to go, and then I pushed the door shut. What did you do next? I stood at the foot of the stairs and listened. What did you hear? I heard dogs snarling and panting. Visible discouragement of the bench, boredom of the public, and exasperation of the lawyer for the defense. Dogs again. But the inquisitive judge insisted. What dogs? She bent her head, and spoke so low, that he had to be told to. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.